I offer my salutations at Bhagavan's lotus feet, whom we all adore, whom we all revere, whom we all worship as our Lord, as the Lord of the universe. I'm very happy to be here in Los Angeles, especially to be with you here tonight. This is all due to Swami, because I never dreamt that I would come to this beautiful city and to meet devotees here. Although I have met devotees from here, we have met in India, Prashanthi Nilayam, for over 20 years. Venice Mead, for example, B. Flag, Ronnie Moran's, you know, many others, Michael Goldstein, Halonik, the Bozanis, Al Drucker in those days, and many, many, many others from the United States. It is always the Lord's will. It is Baba who makes things possible. So I must thank him. And I must also thank you for inviting me, for spending a beautiful night in this beautiful house. I want to talk to you not so much about the school, which you already know about, but I want to talk to you about the basis of that school, the fundamentals of that school. And this has to do with faith. So I want to talk to you about faith and service. Faith, service, and I think I'll add in divine love. This will give a clearer picture of the school and its success story. I am very fond of the scriptures because I believe that they help us, they guide us. They are signposts, they advise us, they are very important to me. And so therefore, on the question of faith, I would like to refer to the Christian Bible and as well as the Hindu scriptures, the two traditions, Christian tradition and Hindu tradition. In the Christian Bible, there is the story of three boys, three young adults, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In the Old Testament, you'll find this story. There lived a king, a very powerful king, King Nebuchadnezzar. Who demanded to be worshipped. And the whole nation worshipped him. If the bugles were blown, people would fall on the ground and worship King Nebuchadnezzar. This was the practice in his kingdom. These three boys, however, refused to worship King Nebuchadnezzar because they believed in there being one God only. They were reported to the king. Their offense was treasonable. The king called these three young adults and warned them of the consequences of their actions and demanded to be worshipped by them. They refused. Sentence was therefore passed on them. Death by being thrown into the fiery furnace. This was how executions were carried out in those days, during that period. The king, the courtiers, and all the people had assembled to watch the execution, just as you watch baseball in this country. Many people do gather to watch baseball. So too, it was a sport in those days to have people executed openly by being thrown into the fiery furnace. The three boys were thrown into the fiery furnace, one after the other. And what happened? The king, King Nebuchadnezzar, saw a fourth person in the fiery furnace. And the boys were walking in the fire. They were not hurt, not a single hair of their bodies was burnt by the fire. King Nebuchadnezzar was perplexed, and he shouted, he cried, and called the boys out. And that was the point when King Nebuchadnezzar was converted to there being only one God. It is in the Book of Kings, the Old Testament. Now you see how faith. These boys had absolute faith in there being only one God, in a God that they believed did exist, in a God they worshipped. So they were prepared to die for that God, to sacrifice their lives. This is important. And you see, their God did not let them down. He was with them in the fiery furnace. Just as when Bhagwan says, why fear when I'm here? The God that you believe in is always with you. This is one beautiful example of faith. In the same Old Testament, in the book of Daniel, we are told of how Daniel too, this was centuries had passed, of course. It was another era. Daniel too refused to worship the king. The punishment was not to be thrown into the fiery furnace, as it was then, the practice, but the new practice was to be thrown into the lion's den. The lions would be starved for 2 or 3 days in readiness for their victim to be thrown into their midst. When the day came for Daniel to be thrown into the lion's den, there was a big gathering. People enjoyed seeing the lions tear into pieces their victim. When Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, what happened? Instead of the lions tearing him into pieces, they played with him. The people saw the lions and Daniel playing together, thus proving again the power of faith, the importance of faith. Faith in God. God will never let you down. God will always be with you. If we switch over now to the Hindu tradition, we find the beautiful story of a boy whom you are all familiar with, Prahlada. Again, his father was king, and the father did not believe in God, and this boy believed in God, always sang the glory of God, always called the name of God, despite so many warnings. The father tried to persuade the boy not to believe in God, but the boy refused, did not pay heed to the father. At that point in time, the father felt that it was better that this boy was sacrificed, was given up, killed. And several attempts were made. He was taken to the top of a mountain and thrown into the river, into the sea, the roaring sea. And we are told in the Hindu scriptures how the waves brought this boy back to shore, unharmed. The father ordered the boy to be thrown before a wild elephant in the hope that the elephant would crush this boy to death. What did the elephant do? It lifted the boy with its tusk and placed him on its back and walked with him to town. The father even forced the mother of the boy to give her son poison to drink. The mother was crying. She had no choice but to give the deadly poison to her son to drink. And the boy drank that poison. And we all know what happened. He was unharmed. The story of Prahlada is famous in the Hindu tradition. It shows clearly how faith in God, a young adult again, who pinned his faith in God, was not let down by God. He or she who has faith in God would never perish. That is one other example in the Hindu tradition. Now, in that same tradition, we all know the wonderful story of Hanuman. Hanuman who had absolute faith in Rama. He had nothing to think about other than Lord Rama. Lord Rama was in his mind. Lord Rama's name was always on his lips. Lord Rama was always in his heart. He all cared only for Lord Rama. And you know how he undertook that dangerous mission of going to Lanka to rescue Sita, to fight, to war. It was a question of life and death. Hanuman did not think about the consequences, did not think about his life. He went to Lanka, and you know the story, how when he allowed himself to be arrested, and there was great jubilation in Lanka that the mischievous monkey had at last been caught, taken to the great court of Ravana, the king. In that court were soldiers, generals, well armed. Little Hanuman was taken to that court with jeers and laughter. He was placed before King Ravana. And Ravana looked at him and said, "Hey monkey, hey mischievous monkey, whose messenger are you? Whose messenger are you? Believe me, you and I, if we were to find ourselves in that situation, we would be sweating, would be trembling, would be afraid, scared. But Hanuman said, I am the messenger of Rama, your adversary, the man whose wife you have abducted." Hanuman was not mindful of his life. He was not interested. He was interested in Lord Rama because he knew that nothing would happen to him. And you know the rest of the story. Through the grace of Lord Rama, Lanka was burnt to ashes. Hanuman returned victorious. And even after the coronation, when Rama returned to Ayodhya, and of course the duties were distributed, Hanuman was left out. He was given no job. He had no job to perform at all. He was not upset. He did not grumble. You know, he did not sulk. For him, positions of authority were unimportant. Whether they made him president of a center or of a region or not, he was not interested in those things. He was only interested in Lord Rama. That was his focal point. And you know the rest of the story. Rama asked Hanuman, "Hanuman, what job has been given to you? Hanuman said, no job. And Rama said to Hanuman, come to me now, come close to me. You know, we have a tradition that as king, whenever I yawned, there should be someone very close to me who would snap his fingers. That was the custom. That was the practice. So this is your job. So those who tried to separate Hanuman from Rama failed by not giving him that job, any position in the court. Hanuman became even closer to Lord Rama. He just had faith. Now, you may say that all these are mythologies in both the Christian and the Hindu traditions, but they are not mythologies at all. These are true stories, events that actually took place. And we should all draw lessons from these, from the scriptures. In the area of faith, I've given you these four examples, two from the Bible and two from the Hindu tradition. How faith in God, and in our case, therefore, faith in Bhagwan Baba, whom all of us say is God incarnate, because it is true that He is, we must pin our faith in Him. Whatever may happen to us, success or failure, in sickness or in health, whatever may happen to us, our faith should remain unshaken, because Bhagwan will never let us down. He may not give us what we want in terms of material things. Material things, He has already told us, that are useful, but they are not important in the spiritual path. So let us have faith in our beloved Swami at all times. That is on faith. Now, I want to move on to service. Again, from the Hindu tradition, there is a beautiful illustration of service, the type of service. And this has to do with the story of the eagle called Jatayu. Those of you who are familiar with the Hindu scriptures, you would have come across this story. Jatayu, an old eagle, who one day sat right at the top of the tree, was basking in the sunshine. He was very happy. When suddenly he heard a cry. And when he peeped, he saw a woman in distress. The woman was wailing, crying, and she was being driven away by a huge man, and that was Ravana. Now, Jatayu did not wait to be told what to do. He did not wait for a telephone call or for a circular to tell him that there is need to save someone. He plunged into the fray, attacked Ravana, tried to save Sita. Sita was in dire need. He went into action in order to render service, to give service where there was need. Of course, Ravana was stronger, well armed. Ravana used his sword and cut off the wings of Jatayu the eagle. And we are told that, of course, Jatayu did die and gained moksha. That is the kind of service that we should all have in our own minds. Wherever there is need, we should jump into action and render service. Service when we can. We must not wait. Many a times in our organization, people wait to be informed to be told, and sometimes to be persuaded to give service. So I always say that there is what one might call this Jatayu principle. I talk about it, I call it the Jatayu principle, to jump into action and serve whenever there is need. Of course, there is protocol, there are lines of communications in the modern times which we have to follow, wait for a secular, but many a times presidents of centers, regional presidents, whatever name they give them, are themselves humans, are themselves family holders. They have their own responsibilities. They are not paid people. Should we wait for many telephone calls to come to reach us before we jump into action? I would suggest that we do not do that. Let us give service. But you may ask, what kind of service then? Well, Vivekananda did distinguish three kinds of services. One, the physical service. That is to say, that service which we give to the human body. Someone is sick, we provide medicines. Someone is hungry, we give food. Someone is naked, we give clothes, etc. That is service that helps the human body to survive. But there is a higher form of service, and that is mental service. That service which we give in order to help the minds of people, mental. And this has to do with education, which I'll come to later on. The third form of service is the spiritual service. That service which helps people to turn away from darkness onto the light. But for us, many a times in our organization, we feel that service, true service, means going about, running from place to place, you know, helping. That is fine. Milk, food, medicines, clothing, etc. What I want to suggest here tonight, as I have been suggesting recently, that there is another kind of service which to me is a higher form of service than giving food and clothing. That's fine, I'm not saying it's wrong. And what is this service? Practicing the teachings of Bhagwan Baba. The practice of the teachings of Swami to me constitute the highest form of service. Because that service will help us, will help our physical needs, our mental needs, as well as our spiritual needs. We would become candle lights in our societies. And by being candle lights, we would then enlighten the people. We would be attracted by them. As Dr. Goldstein said in the last paragraph of his circular, he said, "We pray God, we pray Bhagwan, that his grace may empower the new Prasanthi Council to serve the overseas Sri Satya organizations with love. And that the Sri Satya overseas organizations be empowered by the grace of Swami to serve the devotees with love. And that the devotees in the Sri Satya organizations overseas be empowered by the grace of Swami to serve their societies with love." So the whole thing is about service. The Sri Satya organization, as you know, is a service organization. Is basically a service organization with a spiritual base, a spiritual foundation, because love is that foundation. So you see how important service is to us. Swami has never told us, has never told anyone, either in writing or during interview, to go out into the world and bring people, convert people. He says, go into the world and give service. Give service. And he gives beautiful examples of how fruit trees give up their fruits to benefit, to serve other people. Rivers flow in order to serve, to benefit, for the good of others. And so he says that the human body, our bodies that we have, are given to us to serve ourselves as well as to serve others. Because he says it is in service that transformation comes about. So you see how important service is. But, he says, service, he says, without love. Because we can easily do that. Go out and carry out these activities because we are members of the Sri Satya organization. And so we feel bound sometimes to do these things. He says, if we serve without love, that is deplorable. We should serve with love. That is desirable. But he says, when we can love, pure love, divine love, which is not motivated by duty, he said, that is truly divine. And in the book of Corinthians, chapter 14, that is the Christian Bible, St. Paul also talks about service. It is a wonderful chapter, which begins with the words, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, if I do not have love, he says, it becomes like cymbals, like a brass band, is of no avail. Though I give my body to be burnt, though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, says St. Paul, if that service is not motivated by love, it profiteth me nothing. These are the words of St. Paul in advising the Christians of Corinth, telling them about the importance of service. And Jesus Christ himself did say so also in the book of Matthew, helping other people. Whoever you help, you are helping me. Whoever you help, you are helping me. Swami says the same thing. So service is important for us. But of course, we have a common problem in our organization throughout the world. And this is a problem that we would have to resolve, which is the nature of our centers. They are supposed to be service centers, but in reality, we have turned them into centers of worship. We've turned them into centers of worship. We have to think about it very carefully. Swami has never talked about worship at all in centers. He talks about service. This is an area that through time we'll be able to resolve. Because what happens in all our centers throughout the world, we always start off with our altars, which we all love, Bhagavan's photograph, which we adore, we love it so much, and with certain rituals, arati in many cases, so that the center, in fact, becomes a center of worship instead of it becoming a center of service, but with a spiritual base. That is on service. The third thing I want to talk about is divine love. Divine love, closely related to service itself. Again, let's start with Christianity. In the book of John, John 3, the third book of John, verse 16, it is said that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. God so loved the world. God is love. It is love of the world that made God send his Son, Jesus Christ, in Christianity. It is love of the world, of humankind, that made God take forms in avatars, in Rama, in Krishna, and now in a Purna avatar in Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. God is love, and love is God, Swami has taught us. Divine love is so pure, is unconditional. Divine love expects nothing, neither praise nor blame. Divine love is indifferent. Think for a moment what our beloved Lord has to go through by taking this human body, by becoming like us. Think of the problems that we give him. Very, very difficult. He has been preaching for so many years. And even today, he still says he is looking for a single, for one devotee. You see, we do not practice his teachings, and yet he does not stop. Avatars have been disgraced. In the case of Jesus Christ, we know fully too well how he suffered, how he was sort of crucified. But in spite of that, if we go back to the Bible, see what happened, even on the cross, being nailed there, he prayed to his Father, God. He said what? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That is divine love. Even though he was suffering, he still prayed for those who were tormenting him. That is divine love. See our beloved Lord. See how he treats us. He never shuns us away. We go to see him, or even if we don't go to see him, he helps us at all times. He knows all the mistakes that we have made, which in some other religions they would call sins, but we will say mistakes, because Bhagavan says we are not sinners. We are divine beings, only that we make mistakes. But look at the mistakes that we make. You would have thought that he would not talk to some of us, you know. But even there, he still talks to us. He beckons us. He says, come. He looks at us. He looks at the strengths, not so much the weaknesses. And this is clearly also demonstrated in the Christian Bible, in the story of the prodigal son. The young boy who said one day to his father, Father, I am now of age. Give me my own share of your fortune. I don't want to stay in this home anymore. I can manage my own life. The father gave him his share of his fortune. He went away, started gambling, bad company, until the money was finished. He had no job. He picked up a job in a pig farm, and he had to eat the food that the pigs ate. He cried. He said he must go back to his father and beg his father that he would not mind becoming a servant in his father's household. And we are told in the Bible that one day the father sat in his veranda, like we have at Prasanthi Nilaya, but it was an open veranda, and he saw a lonely and haggard boy coming towards him, and he recognized him. He recognized his son. The father got up, rushed towards the boy, embraced him, because the boy had come home, and ordered the household to give him new clothes, to give him better food, etc., etc., showing divine love. In other words, even though this boy had done such terrible things, really, such terrible mistakes, the father still loved him. The father always wished that one day this boy would return home. That is divine love. And that is the love that Bhagwan Baba has for us, all of us. And this is the love that he also wants us to practice, to keep on loving, that we should see ourselves in others. We should see ourselves in others always. And he gives us beautiful sayings like, religions are many, goal is one, says Bhagwan. Clothes are many, yarn is one. Cows are many, milk is one. The cows in America, cows in Africa, cows in China, milk is one. People are many, says Bhagwan. Breath is one. Same life, same breath, same air, we all breathe. Same air. Nations are many, humanity is one. This is how we can love, by seeing oneness, that all of us are one. Humanity is but one family. And Bhagwan has given us so many illustrations of this, such as I have just narrated. We must see one another. We must forget the differences, or we must not magnify the differences in us. Differences in the color of our skins, differences in the sexes, differences in abilities, differences in cultural traditions. Bhagwan says, we must look at what unifies us. We must see unity in diversity. Americans, Africans, Russians, Muslims, all people are one. We must treat one another in that manner. We must see ourselves as coming from the same stock. It is the same God. You know what Bhagwan says? It's his word. Like Los Angeles. Streets are many, but Los Angeles is one. We are all one. This is how we can practice divine love. Let us continue loving. Let us continue loving and follow Bhagwan's teachings. You know, Swami has said, this time our lives, the lives that we live, will clearly show, will clearly demonstrate to the world his message. So therefore, let our lives so shine before men, as it is in the book of Proverbs. Let our lives so shine before men, before people, that they may glorify our beloved Bhagwan, who is with us now in this world. This is the best way that the name of Swami can be preserved, can be protected. And this is another area, an area of confusion. Many a times we feel that the way to protect, or perhaps the only way to protect Swami's name, is to patent it, you know, so that no other person can use it, or that we should not abuse Swami's name. That is true, but how? By our lives becoming shining examples. That is the best way to protect Swami's name. When people can see in us nothing but God, nothing but love, nothing but peace. Then they would ask, who are you? Then we would say, we are devotees of Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba. So I think I'll end up by saying, by concluding what you may call in America, wrap up. This evening I've tried to give you a short talk based on three main themes on faith, and I've drawn examples from the Christian tradition and the Hindu tradition. And on service, I've drawn example principally from the Hindu tradition, the story of Jatayu, the Jatayu principle. And then on divine love, drawing examples from the Bible and from the life of our beloved Lord. Because he himself has said, I have separated myself from myself in order to love myself. That is divine love. Now, it is this love, this service, this faith that propelled us to go to Zambia. When we attended the first Bal Vikas Conference in 1983, Bernice was there, B-Flag, and all, quite a few of us were there. We were so moved by this program of human values. And we felt that this would be the answer to the world's educational problems. We then went to London and tried to put it into practice in the schools in which we were teaching. But the time came when the divine will willed that we should return to Africa. And you know the rest of the story from the video which you have watched. We saw Swami. Swami said, go to Africa and start a school. There the interview. Genevieve, and this is true of women sometimes, in fact most times women are braver, you know, when it comes to spiritual matters than men. It was she who asked, but Swami, why are we going to get the funds? And Swami said, sell your house and use the funds. If that's not enough, borrow from the bank. You know. Now we had faith in him. Being brought up in the Christian tradition, there is a story in the Bible of how a very rich man one day went to Jesus Christ and said, Master, I've done everything that I can. What else do I have to do in order to gain eternal life? And Jesus said to him, sell all that you have, give to the poor, and follow me. And the man ran away from Jesus because he thought that Jesus was mad, you know, to tell him to do that. So with that background, we knew that the Lord was testing us. When Bhagavan says, sell your house, some people might say, oh, that is wickedness. I mean, Baba, what is it? Swami, who created the universe? What is a tiny house? A tiny house, like a pebble, you know. What is it? You know, if he wants to build schools throughout the world, he can do that. But we knew he was testing us. And we had absolute faith in him, and we packed up our things. We sold the house. It took a little time to sell the house, but we used our savings, our insurance, and we left London with four containers, because all the carpets, the cookers, the fridges, all our chairs, furniture, our cars at the time, we had four Mercedes cars. We shipped all those to Zambia, because we had faith. And with that faith, we were not afraid. We started work in constructing the house, the school. And since that time, of course, you know the rest of the story. The school has become famous in the world. Famous why? It is due to Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba. It is not due to me or to Genevieve or to the teachers that are in that school. It is Swami himself who, through his grace, that the school has become a respectable institution throughout the world. Now, this is very important. The school is so important today that the Human Values Program of Swami, the United Nations Habitat, have now accepted it as a strategic tool in bringing about new water use ethics in water education in Africa. It is a very big topic. But what is happening in Africa is this, that the population is increasing in leaps and bounds, and the supply of water remains the same. Now, as you all know, 75% of this earth is covered by water, and yet only 2% is drinkable for humans. Now, in countries where machinery is very small and very difficult to come by, the problem is even made worse. So there are water riots in Africa because of scarcity of water. There's a lot of vandalism of pipes, standing pipes. There's a lot of corruption, there's a lot of unconcern, there's a lot of, people are applying the utilitarian principle. That is to say, they only think of themselves, they don't think of others at all in the use of water. And although technical and regulatory measures have been used for many, many years by water utilities companies in Africa, the desired results have not been achieved. And as a result of this, an expert group meeting was called in Johannesburg by the United Nations. Experts from all over Africa, including Europe, assembled in Johannesburg for 3 days to consider alternative ways of helping water demand management, WDM, in Africa. It was during that period that I was invited by the head of the infrastructure of the United Nations, Mr. Kalyan Ray, who happens to be a devotee of Baba. Baba used him as an instrument. He invited me to present a paper. We both of us had in mind to use human values as an additional component to water demand management. I presented this paper, of course, acknowledging the source of human values, that Bhagwan Shisete Sai Baba is the inventor of this program. Education in Human Values originates from him, and that he is the inspirer. And this acknowledgement is in old United Nations books. And then I presented the program just as we know it, you know, its philosophy and its methodologies, direct method and the integrated method, especially the integrated method into the curriculum of schools. UN then asked me to be their consultant using TISE, that is the African Institute of Sete Sai Education. They gave us terms of reference, and part of the terms of reference was to review the curriculum of 6 countries in Africa. And these were Ethiopia, Kenya, Zambia in Central Africa there, and Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, that is Ivory Coast, and Ghana. Review the curriculum of these countries, but compare it with some overseas curriculum, and we used the curriculum of Wisconsin and that of England to see whether human values, value-based education, can be found in this curriculum. That was a very big task. We were not trained to do this. We have not been trained to develop curriculum at all, and we did not read books on curriculum development. And yet, after 6 months, we were able to produce a lot of work covering more than 400 pages sent to the United Nations, and they all liked it. Nobody complained about it. Before sanctioning it, they sent it to these countries, to the ministries of education of those countries, and they all accepted it. How was that possible? Only Swami. It would not have been possible at all. And then we were asked to train trainers. In each country, we would go to each country, spend a week there, training what we call the trainers, that is, the education officers, curriculum developers, and subject specialists. These are the top people, you know, high-level training in each country. We'll spend 1 week with them, give them the necessary training as we know it, as Bhagwan has taught us, the EHV program itself. And thereafter, leave them to carry it on They will then have pilot schools, which they now have. Each country will have pilot schools. Some countries have 10 pilot schools. And we have to monitor these pilot schools around about August, monitor the pilot schools to see, because the aim of these countries now is to mainstream value-based education, human values, in the school curriculum. But they have to start with pilot schools where they test the program, so that by June next year, these six countries, which are at an experimental stage, would have incorporated human values in the school curriculum. But now more schools, more countries are coming in. Tanzania is joining. Before I left, in fact, UN was expecting me to return on the 2nd. I said, no, I couldn't make it, because I have to go to Tanzania, and also Uganda, that is in East Africa. On the West Coast, there is Burkina Faso, there is Mali, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. So more countries are coming in into the United Nations program, accepting the human values-based education as an additional complement, as an additional complement in the struggle to have the proper and efficient use of water in Africa. Now, all this is possible because of these three things, these three points that I earlier gave you, and that is faith in God, that is faith in Bhagwan Baba, and that is service, you know, unconditional service, you serve with divine love, and of course, the divine love itself, which is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. It is him. If whatever you hear people say about Africa, and a lot of things are happening out there, you know, in terms of this values-based education, what we call education in human values. Mountains are being moved out there, not by us, but by Swami. As you can see, even the video tells you about dropouts being taken to the school, and within 2 years, when they take the national examination, their performance is first class. How is that possible? It's only through Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. With these few words, I think I'll stop and perhaps invite some questions to be asked. Thank you very much for listening. Sai Ram.